Great. Who likes jigsaw puzzles? Anyone with me on that? A few hands going up. Well, a couple of weeks ago, we were on a family holiday up near Lake Taupo, and the weather was not great. And there was a day when I could not face the thought of another sort of few hours playing canasta. And so I popped into a local op shop and picked up a jigsaw puzzle. Now, it was a jigsaw puzzle that was based on the game of Cluedo. So you know Cluedo, where you've got to work out who has killed Dr. Black. And you didn't know who had killed Dr. Black until you had completed the jigsaw puzzle. And then there would be clues there that would tell you who the murderer was. And it was the hardest puzzle I have ever done in my life. It was 1,000 pieces of all shades of black and brown, pretty much. And the rest of the family gave up very quickly. Ian didn't even start. and I was determined to keep on going, but it was so difficult because they never gave you a picture of what you were trying to make. Because if they did, of course, they would tell you who the murderer was. So you had to build a jigsaw puzzle and not know what you were actually making. And you would fit pieces in and think it would all come together and then realize it was all in the wrong place. And it was hard, and I wanted to give up so much. And all I wanted was a big picture to tell me what I was making and where I was going and to help me make sense of those small pieces. Spoiler alert, it was Colonel Mustard who killed Dr. Black. But I got there in the end, I finished it. But it was hard, I needed that big picture. And I think so often we can be like that, can't we? We can be like that about life. We pick up small circumstances of our life and we look at it and we just think, where does this fit? How can I make sense of it? And we need that big picture, the big story that tells us the end from the beginning. And that is what we have in the gospel. That is what we have in that little video just there, because God writes the story from the end. And he shows us that big picture. And that big picture is that we need saving. Michael needed saving earlier. Thank goodness he got out. We need a rescue plan. And we've been hearing that, haven't we, over the last few weeks as we've looked at the stories of Genesis. If you remember, we looked at how sin matters and it ensnares us and traps us. We heard last week from Ian that we cannot rescue ourselves. We are not indestructible. We need help to get out. And thank goodness we have someone with a rescue plan. Someone who can help us start again. And that's what we've got. When Noah steps out of the boat, out of the ark, we can see very quickly that that Noah is the new Adam. He's Adam Mark II. It's almost like God is like a film director. He's gone, cut. That was rubbish. We're going to start again. Take two from the top. Let's do it again. So Noah steps out of the ark with the animals. And the parallels of the two stories are really significant. And very, you can't miss it. In the same way that God says to Adam and Eve, be fruitful and multiply. Go out, be fruitful, be creative. In the same way he says that to Noah, not just once, but actually three times in that passage that Shirley read. In the same way that God commissions Adam and Eve to be guardians and tear of nature and creation, to tend that. We see that again in Genesis 9, that we are recommissioned to look after creation. In the same way that in Genesis 1:27, God says to Adam and Eve, you are made in my likeness, you are image bearers of the eternal God. In the same way, in Genesis 9, God says to Noah and his family, you are made in the image of God. There is something special about human life. And no matter who you are, whether you're rich or poor, high-born or low-born, whether you're Christian or not, there is something special about human life. And any assault on human life is an assault on the Creator God. And these parallels between the Adam story and the Noah story are there on purpose, because they're supposed to give us hope that things can go wrong, badly wrong, and yet God can reset. Have you ever reset your settings on the computer and it all goes blank and you think, what on earth has happened? Is it ever going to restart and reboot? God is able to restart. There is hope for a second chance, a second go. And if the story of Noah was going to end in chapter 9, verse 17, we might think, great, fantastic. Isn't God great? He can create something, it goes wrong, but it's okay because he can start again, and then there's never going to be another flood again. Happy days, end of story. We're all going to live happily ever after. And yet, unfortunately, that's not where the story ends. I'm afraid we didn't quite finish off, and if we'd read a few more verses, and those of you who know the Noah story know that after God has promised never to flood the earth again, that's a very odd little sequence. Do people know this little bit of the end of the story of Noah? There's a very odd little bit that involves drunkenness and nakedness and shame and separation and feuding. And actually that is how the story of Noah ends. It doesn't end with a lovely rainbow and all happiness ever after. It ends with confusion and separation and guilt and shame. In the same way that the story of Adam and Eve ends with Adam and Eve cast out of the Garden of Eden, it ends with separation, God and his creation. It ends in shame. And that's exactly the same way that the story of Noah ends. Separation, guilt, and shame. And yet, that is not quite the end of the story. Let's just go on and have a little bit of more of a look and see a little more closely what's going on there. At Noah and Japheth and Ham and Shem. Have I got them all? Noah, Ham, Shem and Japheth. Out of all the people who have ever been written about, ever, out of anyone else, they should have known the disastrous effects of disobeying God. They should have known it because they'd seen what happened to everybody else and they'd seen the rewards of a faithful life. They'd seen it firsthand. And yet, they were not able to live it out any longer. The very goodness that saved Noah to start with, that got him into the ark over everyone else, ultimately was not good enough. And that is the story of the Old Testament. God resets people for short. God brings his disappointment and his anger and punishment. It resets And yet, people are not able to learn from their lessons and they fall short again. And you might actually think that's the story of my life. I learn my lessons. I think I've learnt my lessons. And yet, I'm not able to carry on living like that. I fall short. I muck up. I get it wrong. And that's the tension. God's wrath and disappointment at our shortcomings, alongside God's compassion and forgiveness for our weaknesses. Over and over and over again, there's the storm of his punishment and his reset, alongside the sunshine of his love and his compassion. And what do you get when you put sunshine through the storm? You get the rainbow. What do you get when you refract, when you juxtapose sunshine and storm, love and wrath and punishment? You get the rainbow. And isn't it amazing that despite our constant falling over, there's that rainbow, which is a testimony that no matter how many times we fail to live up to things, there is that rainbow, that promise that even though you fall short, my promise is eternal. Now, in preparing for this sermon, I learned something that I'd never, ever realized about the story of Noah before. I mean, I've been in church since I was this high, and I'd never realized that even the reading we read today in the NIV version, which a lot of you will have, it mistranslates the word for rainbow. Did you know that? And so when God says, I'm putting my rainbow in the sky, yes, of course, it is a rainbow. Don't get me wrong. He's talking about a rainbow. And yet the actual Hebrew word that is used there is a warbow. Of course, it was just the same shape as a bow. So really what, and I don't know if Stephen, we've got a photo just to sort of show you, just so that you can sort of see that shape. The shape, the arc of the rainbow, what God is saying here is no matter what you've done, I'm laying up my war bow. I'm laying up my weapon. I'm not, never again will I come at you with eternal punishment, with punishment, but I'm coming at you, coming towards you in love. Thanks, Stephen. We might need it again in a minute, but thank you. So God is saying, even though Noah, you haven't learned the lesson of the flood, and you never will, I'm putting up my weapons, putting them down. And you might be thinking, what's going on here? Why was God so willing to wink at sin here? Even though because he gave them the rainbow, even knowing that they were still going to muck up. How is he able to come against sin with such judgment one minute with the flood, and yet come at sin the next minute with such compassion and forgiveness? What's going on? Is God confused? Why is he flip-flopping like that? And you might have read a page of the Bible once before and seen, well, how can God simultaneously hold those two things so closely together? His absolute intolerance of sin, and yet simultaneously, everlastingly will I love you with an everlasting love. I'm with you, never will I forsake you. And thought, what's going on? How can these two things be together? Because the fact is, that we end the Noah story and Noah still needs saving more than ever. And the truth is that God actually needed another, a fuller, an ultimate rescue plan. Steve, I wonder if you could just bring up that picture of the bow again. And have you ever noticed that the bow, if you think like that, it's the war bow. We are protected because the arrow is now facing up. The arrow is facing away. And, you know, I'd never realized this. And I'd never realized, again, it's such a privilege to prepare for a sermon because you look at these familiar stories and you see these things you've never seen before. What is it that makes God send the rain? If you've got a Bible, you'll see that the thing that happens before God says, I'm going to send the rainbow and never again punish the earth. Did you ever notice what happened first? It's in verse 20. Then it says this. Then Noah built an altar to the Lord and offered burnt offerings on the altar. And when the Lord smelt the pleasing odor, the Lord said in his heart, I will never again curse the ground. And that's when he sends the rainbow. So what is it that causes God to look away from our sin? It was the sacrifice that Noah made. And that, I think, is the heart of what enables us to know God's mercy and love. Because a sacrifice means that the sin is still dealt with. It's still dealt with. There is still punishment, but it lands elsewhere so that we are still able to enjoy God's pleasure and his love. When you've got that bow, the punishment is being directed elsewhere. And it was being directed at his son, who ultimately took the hit, who ultimately paid the price, and meant that God's wrath was averted. Because the bow is now the arrow, and the bow is now pointing at the son and not at us. And I guess that's how I want to land today, is you might be looking at the small pictures of your life and thinking, how does it fit? Well, remember the rainbow. Remember that at the heart of every storm, there is the sunshine of God's love. Remember that in his wrath there is always mercy. There is always, always, always mercy in the storm. And I can personally look back at times which I thought were so hard, and I can see that actually God was making me more like him. Because the rainbow tells me that if God is for me, then no one can be against me. So there's always mercy in the storm. And secondly, look at the rainbow because they all point. Everything points to the cross. And Jesus went through the ultimate storm for you. He was the bitter Noah. And he has put in place the ultimate rescue plan, which means that our punishment has forever been averted. In a very real sense, God runs history from the future. There's a wonderful verse in Isaiah 46, verse 10, that says, I am God, the God who knows the end from the beginning. And what he's saying to us this morning is, I hold all things in my hand. I wrote the ending. I have got that big picture that can help you make sense of the small pieces. I have taken the hit of the storm so that you might know the sunshine of my love. There's always, always, always mercy in the storm. Michael got rescued, not as a result of our great answers or intelligence, but because of that get out of jail card. In the same way, we have been rescued, and not as a result of our goodness. Noah was rescued, but ultimately not as a result of his goodness, which was flawed and incomplete, but as a result of the greater rescue plan